Bali traffic suits my temperament. It's busy, bustling, and ever frenetic, but there's no actual angst in the air. If you see a gap, you go for it. But if you don't make it, if someone cuts you off, if an old lady decides to cross the street holding up her hand to announce her intentions, you stop and relax. It's an exercise in surrender, and any other approach will end in frustration or disaster. It's kind of like dealing with a hold down. Sometimes it's time to paddle hard and be adrenalized, and sometimes it's time to hold your breath and relax. Either way, what will be will be. I'm in my little buzz box, coffee perched precariously between my thighs, weaving in and out of traffic as I listen intently to yesterday's recording of my new single, punctuated by directions from Google Maps and the odd WhatsApp voice message from Banksy. He's asked me to drop by his surfboard manufacturing factory to pick up a freshly shaped 8.4 gun. And, oh yeah, there might be some good waves to test it out on. Gulp. While surfing solo at Uluwatu scares the living shit out of me, on some levels, Jim is the perfect mentor in those conditions. He has the kind of gentle, warm-hearted, humorous nature that makes you feel at ease when you're out of your comfort zone. But he can still be found out alone with a few hardened charges at 15-foot plus days. He'll often call me into a big one and encourage me to sit a little deeper than I otherwise would, but I never feel like I have to prove anything. It's an approach that leans toward harmony with the ocean rather than beating it. Like many of my hard-charging friends in this book, Jim is very in touch with his feminine side while maintaining balls of unadulterated titanium when the chips are down. I wonder if that's a thing with surfing musicians, that balance. I love surfing with Jim, and I feel most likely to be in position for a good one when he's showing me around. There's a lot of myth and legend surrounding Banksy, and I think it's safe to say most of it's true. A pioneer and inveterate explorer of huge waves that are off the map, off the hook, and generally off the agenda for mere mortals such as you and I. Unless, of course, you like being dropped off in the desert, 2 hours drive from the nearest one-horse town at a wave of severe consequence with enough drinking water to last a week and no car. Or maybe when you mellow in later years, you might like sleeping under a tarpaulin on the edge of the jungle after a grueling commute followed by 5 hours of intense bush hackery to traverse a mere 3 kilometres. Because that happened last week. Really. This is what Jim enjoys. To me, Jim represents the true hardcore surfer. Off the beaten track, sleeping in your board bag, living off the smell of an oily rag, charging remote waves with no one around, at a time when no sponsor would pay for you to do it. A genuine soul surfer. I've been lucky enough to spend a lot of time with this gentle giant over the past 15 years. Jim's been a great friend and an uncle to my kids. He's made me amps, guitars, and many surfboards. We've done trips to the Mentawais, Northwest WA, West Timor, and little strike missions around Bali. Our conversations are something I truly cherish. From board design, the finer points of single-coil pickups, travel stories, to metaphysics and government conspiracies, we rarely hit a conversational dead end. I first met Jim when I was playing Byron Bay Blues Fest, and we had a good old nerd out about amp sounds. Later that night, I asked Rasta, Dave Rastovich, about Jim, and he said something like, "He's the first version of me." Once I got to know Jim, the parallels were obvious. Both he and Rasta are hard-charging hell men on one hand and spiritual alternative yogis on the other. Both blend the wildly esoteric with the deeply scientific. And somehow, neither takes himself too seriously. This blend of traits creates the kind of free-thinking individual who honestly does not care one iota about the status quo. The kind who will search out rabbit holes with vigour and plunge down deep and then come up again with a brand new perspective. I feel very lucky to call such individuals friends. Jim actually supplied me with his own custom-made amps for many blues fests. It was classic. I'd have amps by Jim and Rasta on percussion, 2 big wave chargers freaking out in my domain. I remember shouting over to Rasta, who was visibly perturbed, "But you've served Chobu!" I've since realised that, although it's fun for me, standing on stage in front of thousands of screaming people can be a little disconcerting to some. It gave me a devious little kick to see these big fish out of water, but of course they totally smashed it and the crowd loved it. More recently, Jim has jammed with me on stage in Bali at my own gigs and at his cafe, the Mango Tree in Padang Padang. He's a great blues rock player, and we love getting together and trading licks. When we're out in the lineup and a set is approaching, we're often still discussing guitar licks as we get into position. In the Shaping Bay, Jim is probably best known for his big wave guns, but he was also one of the pioneers of the Fish revival in the early 2000s. The thing I love about Jim's Fishers in particular is that although they're great for small wave groveling, they still go really well in solid overhead waves. Banksy comes from the colourful tail end of an era where the Surfer Shaper reigned supreme. It must have been amazing to compete against, and beat at Uluwatu, guys such as Simon Anderson, inventor of the thruster, Terry Fitzgerald, aka the Sultan of Speed, single fin lord, and Mark Richards, four times world champ and king of the twin fin. Three different designs, three radically different styles, and three different takes on surfing, almost different religions. What an era. The best surfers in the world, half athlete, half artist, doing their own unique aquatic dance in harmony with the wave, on equipment they created with their own hands. What they were riding was the culmination of all of their own scientific, creative, innovative research blended with a healthy dose of folklore and car park gossip. What we were witnessing were true Renaissance men. When they paddled out on their own boards, they performed their art on their art. The Surfer Shaper has to have an impressively diverse range of intelligences and skills under their belt. As surfing has progressed, we've had 40-odd years of increased specialisation. The boundless mindset of the generalist at his or her peak as surfer and shaper seems to be found in the strongest concentration in those of Jim's vintage and older. Andrew Crockett, a mate of mine who wrote an amazing surf book called Switchfoot, once said to me something that really stuck with me. How you do one thing is how you do everything. It therefore stands to reason that when Jim gets into playing guitar, he does what a surfer shaper would and creates not only the music, but the tools to create the music. He makes art on his art. Jim's depth of knowledge when it comes to designing amps and guitars, of the interaction of this vintage valve tube with that circuit and that particular amp, with that pickup on that guitar, made out of that specific kind of wood at that volume, absolutely baffles me. And I'm leaving a lot of variables out for your benefit. Jim and I enjoy many and intense technical discussions on the aforementioned tonal minutiae, after which I usually feel like having a quick vertigo-related vomit and a brief lie down. He has a deep, restless, perpetual passion for his craft. Creating the ultimate amp or guitar is about finding that ethereal tone in your head. Sometimes you get near it, but I'm sure most craftsmen will lament that you never quite get there. And if you get close, there's always another tone and always another texture, another feeling to be evoked through synchronicity of player and instrument. Small refinements, updates, tweaks to the player and the instrument, just as there is to surfer and surfboard. These relentless quests come from an insatiably curious mind. A mind containing many predictions, hopes, insights, and stories. I'm looking forward to another rambling conversation of this kind as I make my way from the factory to his place. The burnt orange 8-4 gun that I picked up from the glasser across the back street, just my colour. Such a nice board, I comment, as Jim runs his expert eye over his most recent creation for the first time. Together we go check the surf from the relatively quiet vantage point atop majestic cliffs that loom over you, monolithic, as you paddle into clean, lurching waves full of water and power, reminiscent of some cold water waves down south in Victoria. Although known these days for its intense crowds and Mad Max barter town vibe that follows the cliff down to the water, Uluwatu is still wild, rugged, and beautiful. Like life, it's what you choose to focus on that dictates your reality. The news is great, depending on your perspective. The waves are easily 6 to 8 foot, with the odd 10-foot mountain coming through every now and again. It's been a while since I've surfed a wave of that size, but when you're board testing what would almost be classed as rhino chasers and are clearly overgunned, nerves give way to good-natured banter. We have a super fun session all afternoon and are the only ones out trying to pick off a couple of bombs in the dark before we come in and make our way up the cliff. Then we retire to the local warung to do an interview. Warungs are eateries that sell cheap, tasty food. They often have sand floors and many have little or no refrigeration. A true warung is like a family-owned milk bar, really usually attached to the family home. Banksy and I settle in our plastic chairs, surfed out sunburnt, sore and stoked, and order up and begin the interview.